www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
Holmes left behind any evidence that links him to Jack the Ripper, it's most likely to be at this spot. So it's critical we find out what's buried here.
Is it? In today's episode, Toby Ball and I are also going to get buried in the pile of manure masquerading as TV documentary material about Victorian America's foremost serial killer, H.H. Holmes. It's episode 15 of The Blotter Presents. Welcome back from the break, everybody. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am joined this week by our esteemed guest from episode 5, noir novelist and crime writer's on official skeptic, Toby Ball. Welcome back, Toby.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, we'll see about that. more on that anon. But first, a little bit of podcast business. You can buy an ad on this and any other podcast in the suite of previously.tv podcasts by visiting our website at previously.tv/ads. $50 for a personal ad, like a birthday message, $100 for a commercial or business ad. You can send us some sound files or we can write the thing for you. It's totally up to you. All the information you need, once again, is at previously.tv/ads. Okay, so here is our most wanted piece of shit. Toby was nice enough to come back on the pod for a discussion of History Channel's new H.H. Holmes event series, American Ripper, which, as you are listening to this, premiered last night. It is, in my opinion, so goddamn bad that I'm pretty sure Toby's never going to consent to come on the show ever again. I could be wrong about that. Toby, would you agree that this thing is a major waste and you're probably not going to watch past the premiere?
I can confirm that I will not watch any more of this. I was actually stunned to see that it's 8 episodes.
I know. How?
And why?
Well, I mean, I think I kind of know why, but let's back up. Okay. Did you know anything about this? Did you know anything about this particular killer or his murder castle before enduring these materials?
I didn't, other than isn't he the guy who's the subject of The Devil in the White City?
He is.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
but that's the extent of it. I didn't read that book or anything.
Oh, okay. That is a good book that I recommend, although the author, Larson, is actually a little stronger on the subject of the World's Fair, which was occurring at the same time in Chicago. Holmes, who was born Herman Mudgett, was a serial killer and insurance scammer. These things were related. In Chicago in the late 19th century, he built this so-called murder castle replete with trash chutes to nowhere, gas chambers, asbestos-proofed abattoirs that would dampen the sound of his myriad victims screaming. He lured dozens of victims into this hellhole. The new take on it in American Ripper is that Holmes's great-great-grandson, Jeff Mudgett, has, all right, let's let Jeff tell us what the hell's going on here in clip two.
My great-great-grandfather, H.H. Holmes, was America's first serial killer. A con man and an evil genius, he engineered a death factory in the late 1800s that claimed an uncountable number of lives. At the very same time, another killer was slaughtering victims on the streets of London. He was never caught or identified, but you may know him as Jack the Ripper. I believe my ancestor, H.H. Holmes, and Jack the Ripper are the same man.
Oh, God. I don't think I'm supposed to be laughing, and yet here we are.
The sound design on this is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's one word for it. There are a couple of things that I can't with when it comes to true crime. One of them is like self-published memoirs by ladies of a certain age who suddenly remember that their fathers killed the Black Dahlia.
Right.
The other one is crackpot ripperologists deciding that someone famous has to have been Jack the Ripper, or that some other criminal was also Jack the Ripper. I mean, are you into Jack the Ripper at all? Have you done any reading about that case?
I did a long time ago. You know, I don't think I'm up on like the latest in Ripperology, but I'm pretty clear that this is not it. There is sort of like, yeah. Was it Monty Python who did the did dinosaurs build Stonehenge? Like, yeah, that's kind of what so. I was reminded of.
Yeah, I've done enough reading on it. There was a book out a few years ago by Robert House that is a very measured, extremely well-researched look at the case. He draws like two or three conclusions as to who it might have been. It was a like disorganized, psychotic person that, according to any profiling measure, granted, everybody thinks they can be a profiler after watching NCIS in the hotel while getting ready for the wedding. But still, it's pretty clear that someone as extremely organized as H.H. Holmes was not the Ripper, probably. And also, well, okay, yeah, let's run another clip that points up the unintentionally hilarious sound design.
You know, no matter how many times I visit this horrible spot, it's still the screams of the victims that I hear the most.
Well,
yeah, I laughed out loud at that part.
Oh God!
It's like you really hear the screams the most, and I guess you gotta understand that he's basically looking across the street at a post office in a yard when he's saying this, in this sort of grim-faced, profound look.
And yeah, this is a guy. He's apparently a trial lawyer. I can't remember if he's retired or still practicing, but he has that little like Quaker chin beard and was wearing a little dichroic glass pendant. And I was like, yeah, oh, you're that guy. You're
Quaker
like
hipster.
Yeah. Who goes to Burning Man and has like a table with true crime books. I don't know. I've never been to Burning Man. Don't at me. That's probably not a thing there.
I don't think so. I think you have to barter at Burning Man.
Yeah, probably. And who knows what he would barter for. Assisting Jeff Mudgett on this case is the improbably named, quote, CIA operative Amaryllis Fox. Do you understand what her qualifications are?
It was not entirely clear to me, other than she'd done a bunch of stuff for the CIA. Wasn't that what she claimed at the beginning?
Yeah. And then she kept mentioning her contacts, but I get the feeling that we are supposed to hear CIA operative and think that it's close enough to a retired FBI profiler that they can serve the same function. But
yeah,
I'm not sure how like a former spy, if that's even what she did, an operative could have meant data entry for all I know.
Yeah, you see a lot of tradecraft, like when they're in Gilmanton using cell phones to like rush across Gilmanton, population like 2,000, from like one end of town to the other to check out some like, what was it? It was like building plans or death certificates or something. It's like,
yeah,
get on over here.
I think they were trying to, this is a town that seems to have kind of a lot of official historians for a town that size, but anyway,
I think there's a lot of I think there's legitimately a lot of history in Gilmanton.
Oh yeah,
it's an old place, and I actually drove through it yesterday on my way home from vacation. It doesn't look like the kind of place that's going to like produce a serial killer, but it's old. There's like you drive by the town pound, which I don't think is still in use, but it's there in a bunch of old cemeteries and stuff. It's beautiful.
Right. No, it looked nice. And I mean, who knows what really creates a serial killer? Opinion seems to be divided on whether this was a nature or nurture thing with young Herman, but they did some flashbacks in this one using a kid who looks exactly like Max from Parenthood, which weirded me out. I did take a screenshot of this, and if you follow us on Twitter at Blotter Presents, you will see that this week. Sorry in advance. But a bunch of kids around his age died suddenly, I guess, which I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess that's odd in a small town, but it's also the 1800s. Like, kids just died. People just died of like hangnails.
Right. And they're saying that because there wasn't a cause of death on this ledger, that it was mysterious. But then they also say later that they don't record everything.
So yeah. So
it seemed a little, it's a little, like, bit of a stretch.
Not failure to disprove a negative seems to be the entire basis of this show. I mean, there is a little bit of background that we get on a guy from a guy who I think is pretty much there to sell copies of his book about Holmes, talking a little bit about the weird shit that Holmes got up to, like over and above the usual. Like, apparently it was customary for medical students to rob graves and provide their own corpses, but Holmes took it a step further during med school, as we will hear in clip four.
The main thing that survives about his time in Burlington is his landlady said he beat up his roommate for borrowing his mustache wax one time.
Would he have been training on human cadavers in Burlington?
I'm not sure. I usually hear about him just attending medical lectures in Burlington. Might not have been a lot of hands-on work there. That might have been why he decided it wasn't good enough for him. He decided to go to University of Michigan, which was much bigger and also had a real reputation for trafficking in grave robbers in those days.
Mm.
It's almost like a rite of passage for medical students by then.
To go and dig the corpse out of a grave and provide it to the medical school for their anatomy lesson?
Yep, saved the school a lot of money.
So he was very desensitized to human corpses.
Oh, certainly. There were a lot of anecdotes about him, like being all excited to take the body of a baby home with him to dissect over vacation.
I mean,
that's awesome
phrasing. But here again, you see them sort of trying to draw conclusions from things that seem to me to be fairly SOP for life at the end of the 19th century in very small towns and a country that was still mostly an agrarian society. Like, animals died. Like, animals had uses and then died. People got the flu and died. I'm not sure you can draw any conclusions from that. Yeah, the babies is severe, but...
Well, the mustache wax.
I know. Well, I mean...
That's a great detail.
How would you feel, Toby?
If somebody was using my mustache wax, there'd be trouble.
Yeah, especially if they're one of those guys that just dips the mustache directly into the... wax tip. I mean, I loved that detail also, but it's like that guy had clearly been saving it up until someone from the History Channel showed up.
Yeah. So the whole, I don't know. Again, it's one of those, well, he was clearly, you know, comfortable with corpses. Like, yeah, well, he's a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's going through training all those guys, because I assume it was all guys at that point.
Pretty much.
Probably comfortable with corpses. So,
well, and they show in this and in our next, in the next film that we're talking about, they have a number of photos. It's not entirely clear to me that Holmes is actually in any of these, but medical students posed around their assigned cadaver like it's a yearbook picture, and they're kind of holding up this partially mummified corpse and, like, you know, stopping just short of giving each other like bunny ears in that photo. Like, it's not the classiest thing, but I have a feeling that goes on today. Like that's your workplace, and you try to make it fun. Like, you know, not to be crass, but I'm not sure that proves anything, but that's every comment I have about the show. Like, what does that prove?
Right.
Nothing. And I also get the feeling that our investigative heroes are not so bright. Clip 5.
At the school talked about seeing her walking around with black eyes. She was still taking in dressmaking to pay all of his bills.
You mean like abuse?
Yeah. It was in a letter collected from one of his roommates at the time.
Okay, this is Mudgett / Holmes's wife that they're talking about. You mean like abuse? Well, no, Jeff. He means like the ladies' fight club in Flint. Are you kidding? How did you get through law school?
It's the whole thing. So the premise is that this guy, Mudgett, has spent 20 years like researching this and has come up with this idea that his great 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 grandfather was also, in addition to being America's first serial killer, Jack the Ripper. But throughout this entire thing, it seems like he's done no background. Like he's constantly shocked at what he's finding, which seems like the first thing that you would look at, which is like, you know, where was this building? And he's like, I always thought it was the post office, but it turns out it was the lawn next to the post office. This changes everything.
Yeah. And he's not a good enough actor, I don't think, to sort of feign surprise on the third take or whatever. Like, oh, really? Like, well, but that was also, it wasn't just, quote, Holmes's wife. Like, that's your great, great grandmother.
Right.
So presumably, if you care about this theory and you're invested in it, you would know all of this
exactly
already. But you're right. It really doesn't seem like he had done any research, given that the whole pitch of the show is like, I've been brewing this hypothesis for 20 years. And I would say I don't know how they're going to get 8 episodes out of this, but I'm pretty sure I do. And it's like non-informational foolishness like we'll hear in our final clip for this segment.
There's no document in the Chicago Record for Holmes between July of 1888 and early 1889.
It's an obvious gap.
The documents down in the basement had records weekly, monthly for him. It is a big gap.
That gap, that's the exact period that Jack the Ripper was committing his murders in London.
Okay. There's also a gap at that time for my great-grandfather, David Mazzoni Sr. I'm almost positive he's not Jack the Ripper because he was 6 years old and living in Philadelphia. Like, this doesn't mean anything. They're not correlated at all.
Yeah.
7 more episodes of this.
Yeah, even if you believe it, I kind of... That didn't really strike me as... That struck me as a lot of bullshit, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, it's one of those things where if they actually like had anything to go on, it might be kind of interesting. But instead, it just kind of feels like you could go back into anybody's life and sort of, you know, cast aspersions on them based on relatively, you know, ordinary things that they did or were around or whatever. There's nothing in this show except for sort of hinting that, not just hinting, but a couple of people drowned in Gilmanton while he was a kid. And while nobody actually, he was never like accused of it or whatever, they do have like these recreations that show him like walking away ominously from a child face down in the water. So it just, it was pretty, thin gruel, I think.
Well, and the thing is too, it's not like they picked some random guy. I mean, that would sort of be interesting. It's like, let's just pick some random personage from the past and see if we can't like not disprove negatives in such a way that implies that this rando is Jack the Ripper. That would be interesting for me to watch, because a lot of investigations in real life go terribly awry because investigators are drawing inferences that they shouldn't necessarily from facts that, while they are true, are not determinative. But in this case, like, Holmes is already extremely infamous. Like, he has name recognition. He was a monster. He killed dozens of people. And then he carefully cleaned their skeletons and sold their skeletons to medical supply houses and then filed insurance claims on them. Like, this was a bad dude. You don't need to make him any worse. You have plenty of material. I don't know why it's so hard to make an interesting documentary property about this guy. Like, the real estate shenanigans alone, I think, are interesting. But no,
we went 0-2.
Yeah. I have to say, granted, my patience for this kind of thing, the King of England was Jack the Ripper. Like, no, he wasn't. A lot of people find this kind of thing fascinating, and this is clearly how it was sold in the room. But I cannot recommend that anyone watch this, and I'm not exactly sure who it's for. I think Ripper crackpots, and that's not us. Shall we move on, or do you have anything else to say about American Ripper?
I think we're safe.
All set? All right. Let's move on to the cold case version of the H.H. Holmes story. H.H. Holmes, America's First Serial Killer, is available for streaming on Netflix, if you dare. Spoiler, you do not. I thought we might do a variation on a written feature on previously.tv we have called Show Shot Clock, where we gauge how long it takes for us to get sick of a given program that we had hoped to enjoy. My husband and I had fallen asleep in front of this one twice already, trying to get through the whole thing. And this time, I think I started shopping for ping pong tables in another window at around minute 36. Toby, did you get through the whole thing?
You know, it's funny because I almost never fall asleep while watching something, and I did during this, and then I went back to where I had fallen asleep and watched it the rest of the way through, because I was worried that there might be some like twist or fact or something that I would rather know before we tape this, but It turned out that was not actually the case. Except for, well, I don't want to spoil it because I think we'll get to it. I suspect we'll get to it in a few minutes. There was one shocking turn, but we can hold off on that one.
Sure. We were talking a little bit before we started recording about how these two properties were both bad, but in different ways. Can you talk a little bit about the differing badness?
Well, the first one is bad because they have a ridiculous thesis that they then go out and fail to do anything towards proving. And it's just kind of ridiculous. Oh, the one thing, I was just looking at my notes, the guy they have to reenact, Mudgett / Holmes, looks a lot like Freddie Mercury to me.
Yeah. That facial hair configuration was perhaps not ideal. He reminded me of Billy Crudup.
Oh, yeah.
Also not the association, I am a golden god, probably not what should be running through my head under these circumstances. Anyway, please continue.
Okay. And then in the second one, it just seems it's like every awful cliche about these kinds of documentaries added to just kind of crappy production values and what seems to be like a really bad, like noir movie from like the late 30s or something that they've cut up to use for recreations. I couldn't tell if it was, if that was the case or whether it was modern and they had just kind of doctored it up to have that feel to it. But it,
it seemed like some sort of like iMovie filter that they had discovered like deep in their preferences. They're like, ooh, sepia tone with a like iris effect around the edges. Like, well,
but then they also do that weird, like exaggerated acting that you expect from those kinds of movies. So it was all just, it was very strange. So, yeah. And it sounds like it's narrated by Mr. Pitt from Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely does. Except when they do a cutaway to a talking head interview with, I'm not sure if he's the one talking in clip seven, but Harold Schechter is like, has peopled an entire shelf of kind of co-branded, I guess, books about various notorious serial killers, Ed Gein, this guy. He's a like classic nasally talking true crime talking head. Let's hear what he has to say about the trial in clip seven.
Holmes's trial was kind of the O.J. Simpson trial of the day. It just generated this huge amount of publicity. The case had become a kind of national obsession. Of course, there wasn't CNN or Court TV back then, so it couldn't be covered quite as relentlessly, but it was covered very, very extensively. There were true crime books and pamphlets and all kinds of stuff. And Holmes himself had become a sort of folk figure almost, you know, the sort of national boogeyman.
I wish that we had heard a little more about that. They did have some materials. I'm not sure if they created these or if they actually existed. I think they probably actually existed, of like true crime, like magazines, special edition magazines with Holmes on the cover, like brandishing a knife. And the reaction of the culture to this crime would have been interesting for me if they had explored that instead of doing these reenactments where the guy playing Holmes cannot get the lady who's playing the victim into the furnace chute on the first try and her feet keep banging on the door. Like, guys, take it again, please.
Yeah, it's so bad. And that guy, Schechter, it just the way it's filmed makes it look like it's from the 80s and he's wearing like big 80s glasses. Uh-huh. And instead of instead of having him on a set, they basically have like a vanity screen behind him. Like it could be literally anywhere. Yeah. They just set up the screen behind him and he just sits there and it sort of this tilts his head at a funny angle and talks.
Yeah, and they set up like at this angle sort of from beneath him. Yeah. And speaking of Seinfeld, he had that kind of like little Seinfeld-y proto mullet.
I noticed that too.
And I assumed he was in his office and they just took all the art off the wall like they do on reality shows, but I don't know.
I think it's a vanity screen because it had little, you could see the little, you know, hinges.
Oh, yeah.
It was bizarre.
Oh, God.
Everything about it was bizarre.
Yeah, folks, this is what you focus on during this documentary on your third try.
Yeah.
Watching it is like, what do I wish they'd done instead? I wish they'd cast about for perhaps a slightly more convincing reenactment of anything. Let's hear clip eight.
In a short time, not even the bones of my victim remained. It was the footprint of Nanny Williams that was found upon the painted surface of the vault door, made during her violent struggles before death.
She sounds like she's undergoing an asthma check.
Yeah.
The pediatrician.
I love the fact that as his bones are being dissolved, this guy is screaming.
Yeah.
It's so, and there was also, there's a profiler, right? Is that what he was? I kind of lost track of the sort of gray haired, sort of preppy looking guy.
Yeah.
I think
there was a profiler.
It was interesting.
But he was...
He had zero insight.
Yeah, go ahead.
He had no insight.
Yeah. Thomas Cronin. Yeah. That was his name.
He kept talking about these people. Everybody wants to be remembered.
Yeah.
These people make sure that they are.
Okay. Yeah, his phrasing was often excessively... I don't know what the word is. Casual? Gossipy? I mean... Like, I get that you love this topic, but don't be quite so, like, you know, talking over the fence to the neighbors about it in your tone. Like, these people were murdered horribly. Some of them were put in lime while they were alive. Maybe bring the unseemly sweatiness down a notch. Yeah.
I just assume he's got a gin and tonic just off camera while he's doing this.
Oh yeah.
But then the
wish I had.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So the
least one.
The thing that I found stunning at the end is when they're talking to that guy Schechter, and he says that as far as he could tell, that that Holmes only killed 9 people. I was like, wait, what?
Okay.
Wait, what? Because like a lot of those, like he killed a bunch of people that didn't even have anything to do with the Death Castle.
Yeah.
Because he killed, what, his like, partner and then a couple of her
right.
kids, or even more, like 2 or 3 of her kids. That's, like, 4. And I think there's a couple other random people. So he had, like, all these rooms and lime and gas and, you know, a soundproof abattoir for people. But it seems like he only got, like, 4 or 5 people in them.
But I guess I sort of admire that about this documentary, that they sort of don't say, well, the following people were hired by Holmes and then went missing. And so we can assume that he killed them. We probably can. But he admitted to a bunch, I think more than 9 or 10. And then he ran a pharmacy, which like sort of provided him with all his chemical murdering needs, but he'd killed the owner of that and taken over the lease. So yeah, I guess that I admire their sort of intellectual rigor and not claiming more victims for him than they can prove, but I'm pretty sure that we can prove more than not.
You think that was a low ball?
Yeah, I suspect. Right. But again, I don't know. Why do you think, I mean, I don't know. Here's me being like Amaryllis Fox and being like, from 2 properties, let's extrapolate the following declaration of fact. But based on these, I think that maybe it's just really hard to make a good documentary about this guy. Why do you think that is?
To me, at least, I don't think they were sort of approaching it in a very interesting way. You know, and I don't know, like, I assume Devil in the White City must approach it in a different way because it's gotten good reviews. People seem to like it. But it just, you know, starting off with the whole XXX was actually Jack the Ripper. And then turning it into an 8-part series, like, you know, unless you got something really profound, which if they did, they're not doing a good job of teasing it. It's just not going to be that good. And then the second one, it just seems like it just wasn't very organized. And then this happened with like crappy recreations and like random screams and some shitty talking heads, when it seems like you were saying, like the whole thing about how it was the OJ trial of that time, like that to me seems more interesting. Like if you want to have like a slant on it, it's like, what, you know, what does that mean back then? What does it mean to have sort of an infamous criminal that has the nation's attention? How does that, what does that look like? You know, what conclusions can you draw based on that. So that would be like, that would be one angle. It seems like that you could go at it from several angles, but the two ones that they choose seem like among the least interesting that you could come up with, and they're not very well executed either.
Yeah, there's, I guess it's not useful to compare these two to each other in that regard necessarily, because as you point out, one suffers from having this sort of disingenuous, I guess, Jack the Ripper like log line, and the other one is just amateurish and unintentionally hilarious. But there is something to, it's like when you read a, you're like leafing through Vanity Fair and they have a book excerpt and you're like, oh, this is like awesome and super fascinating. And then you get the book and you're like, actually, this was a better magazine article.
Right.
This topic is probably one of those topics that if you go to Wikipedia, like vis-a-vis his life and the murders and his execution, you know, you don't necessarily need a movie about this, especially since nobody who knew him was living. But I would like to see, did you read that book Popular Crime by Bill James?
No.
He's the father of baseball sabermetrics, right. But he's also a huge true crime buff. And he wrote this like overview of American popular crime, like the cases that captured the public imagination, huh, going back to colonial times. And he kind of skipped over this one because he's like, there's not much to say that hasn't already been said. But that would be the angle that I would watch someone that took that angle. Like, why did this seize the popular imagination?
Yeah, you know,
what did it say about America or the Midwest at the time or anything like that? Any angle that's not just kind of either a list of his misdeeds or trying to tie him to shit he had nothing to do with, like the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of thinking about along the same lines while you were talking is, you know, the O.J. Simpson thing they did on ESPN. You know, the idea of using his case as a way of examining sort of like larger social forces that sort of shaped and were shaped by it, you know, maybe that kind of thing would be good.
And that's probably why the Larson book works, because he locates it in a very specific context, which was Chicago on the eve of the 20th century and the World's Fair and all that, yep, stuff, and does a good job putting you there and not making Holmes the only story. So, because everything has a context, and often what's going on around a crime or series of crimes is almost more interesting than just, you know, here's how he lured this poor lady from Skokie and here's how he killed her.
Exactly. I mean, I think the whole, like, the idea of a murder castle has sort of, you know, its own kind of allure to people, whether it's,
sure,
it's creepy or campy or whatever. But
I mean, it's pretty shady of the United States Postal Service to put a post office
on that site.
Yeah,
it's a little strange. Yeah, but you know, even on sort of that sensationalist ground, it doesn't, you know, that doesn't carry, sure as hell doesn't carry an 8-part series, and it doesn't carry this 1-hour crappy documentary.
Yeah. All right. Well,
sorry.
I think I've said just about everything I need to say about H.H. Holmes. I'm sorry that I wasted your guest appearance on this gentleman, but hopefully you'll forgive me. Come back and talk about something that you actually like.
Absolutely.
Anything to plug before we wrap it up for the day?
Well, I'm on two podcasts, Crime Writers On, which we're going into the every 2 weeks now that it's the summer. And I've also got a new podcast called Radio Free Dystopia, which takes a look at sort of the intersection of dystopian fiction and current events. And I think we're up to maybe episode 7 at this point. But that's also on iTunes and all the other podcast apps. And I do it with a journalist named Meg Heckman.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and let us both bid TV farewell forever to H.H. Holmes.
Yes.
Sorry, buddy. Next time, it's The Jury Speaks, featuring the return of my husband, Dan Patrick Brady. And after that, we'll be looking at two Joe Berlinger properties, The System and Gone. You can find us on Twitter at Blotter Presents. We're also on Facebook at Blotter Presents. And visit us to discuss on our forums at previously.tv/forums. Talk to you next time.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.